This is The Women of Letters, a podcast dedicated to the TV show Supernatural and everything fandom. Another Women of Letters podcast. I'm Amy, also known as Sweet Ondine, and I'm here with Jules.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. How are you going?
I'm going okay. Thank you very much. How about you?
I'm very well. Very well on this. Well, it's a Sunday here for us.
Yes, Sunday evening.
Oh, it is. It's five o'clock now, so I suppose that is evening.
It is evening.
And We're gonna talk about this week's episode of Supernatural, The Book of the Damned. But first of all, we wanted to talk about Jared and Jensen's new joint charity campaign and why you need more T-shirts in your life.
All the T-shirts. You need all the T-shirts.
All the T-shirts all the time. Why don't you tell us about this new campaign, Amy?
Well, I'm sure everybody's across it with the adorable videos. But yes, Jensen and Jared have launched a campaign together off the back of the success of both of their campaigns, the Supernatural Family campaign, which Jensen ran, and the Always Keep Fighting campaign that Jared ran. They decided to, they couldn't believe, you know, how much money was raised between the two of them for various charities. So they decided to join together and create another Always Keep Fighting t-shirt, but from Moose and Squirrel, which is just too adorable that they've embraced the Moose
and
Squirrel.
How adorable is that? It's so adorable. I'm getting cavities.
I know.
Of the sweetness of it.
So cute. And on their, if you go to their represent page, which is represent.com, Jared and Jared Jensen, they have a big letter from the two of them about, you know, how amazed they were with what happened with the Supernatural Family and Always Keep Fighting campaigns and what they're hoping to do together for the future and for generations to come, as they say, in creating, I guess they're going to create some kind of like charity foundation or something between the two of them, but this is the first step, this t-shirt, and they have a really lovely little note on there that they sign M&S, which is just too cute, making the world a better place. They make the world a better place just by being damn well in it, not just raising money with t-shirts, for Christ's
sake. And signing off with us, Your ass.
I know, just stop it right there.
That's the next t-shirt.
That should be.
Seriously.
Can I DM Jared?
I'll just DM Jared on Twitter right now.
Yep. DM Jared.
Okay, sent that off.
Yeah, thanks. He's getting bombarded by you today. I'm sorry. Excuse me, people, by the way. I'm still coughing, believe it or not. So they're already at a day, like just over a day, day and a half after they've launched. They're already at, one moment please, caller. They're already at 16,115 t-shirts sold with their goal of 1,000. Of course, there's t-shirts and there's also another site for their phone cases.
Which is called Jared and Jensen cases, and they've sold over 1,000 of those.
There you go. So if you want a phone case, they've got various ones. But they've got t-shirts and sweatshirts and they've got
a tote bag,
which will be great for conventions. I'm sure that's why they were doing it.
Yes, and their slogan is Moose and Squirrel say always keep fighting.
And they've got, and you know, and the t-shirt is just like squee worthy anyway because it's got half one face and half the other.
I know, which coincidentally, Orphan Black starts tonight and sort of the image gives me this sort of, it almost looks like something out of a horror or sci-fi movie with, you know, they've been merged together into one.
A long time ago, I think. I actually looked at it and thought it's really hard to see either of them in it, you know, until you actually split it.
There's some weird optical illusion thing there. It's when you look at it front on, because the artwork in it's excellent and it looks like a cohesive face. Like you can all, and you're right, you have to sort of cover up one half to see
Jensen, then
cover up the other half. But it's very well done. Like if you didn't know Jared and Jensen, hard to imagine the people in the world that don't, but you would just you would just look at that and see a person's face.
Yeah, exactly. You probably would know, but like, but I actually, you know, me being me, I took it apart and split the two faces so I could have a really good look at it. And it's like, yeah, you know, like once you split them in half, they look exactly, they're really good images of it, of both the guys, but together it's like this, what the hell? But no, it's a super cool t-shirt. So that's what they're doing. And if you're not on their Facebook sites, I don't know what's wrong with you people, because they're posting just the cutest damn videos in the world. Apart from their campaign video, which Jared posted first, they've posted a couple of ridiculous outtakes of both of which Jensen is just being completely ridiculously silly.
Oh, absolutely hilarious. So one of Jared Jensen just being a total dag in the background because he thinks Jared's taking a photo, not a video. And another one where someone, I suspect Jared's gone to the trouble of working out how to do googly eyes on the video, which they're entirely too pleased with. Amused.
They're so amused with themselves. It's just so cute. The whole thing's so cute. I love the first one with Jared going, dude, we're recording. I thought we'd take a picture.
It's enforcing our view of Jensen of not being the most tech-savvy of people, even if he is king of the hashtag.
Yeah, exactly. So very cute. Their Facebook has been very cute the last couple of days. They've both updated their profile pics and both updated their cover pages. So yeah, it's if you're not following them on there, please go and do that right now.
Yes, Facebook, the domain of 12-year-olds and dads these days. Dads on Facebook.
Oh my God. I know.
I'm lucky their kids will grow up into a world where they probably won't be on Facebook. They'll be on whatever's next, I think.
They won't. So hopefully they'll never see those embarrassing
Yeah, I was gonna say won't have to bear the embarrassment of having their dads alongside them on Facebook.
Go back and look at their dad's old videos of googly eyes and, oh, my God, Dad, what are you doing? Such an idiot.
That's all right. They're still not on Tumblr, so we're safe there.
They're safe, I reckon, is more the point. It's safer for everybody if they don't go to Tumblr. Don't go to Tumblr, Jensen and Jared.
Well, that is often good life advice for anyone, I think.
It really is.
But do get online. It was great. They've also said that they're going to work with Misha and Random Acts as well. So, you know, again, Amy and I talk about this all the time. It's wonderful to see, you know, people who've not only got a working relationship on the show, but this is, you know, obvious. You know, it seems a bit redundant to say it with Jared and Jensen, but you know, it has grown into something more. And here they're, you know, obviously want to set up something as I said, for generations to come.
It's pretty big. I was like, for generations to come. Yes. I was like, okay. You know, I know. They were very, very emphatic about the generations to come bit. So,
sure. Yeah.
And, which is good because hopefully for generations to come, they'll keep posting on Facebook.
It'll be like the people in 5 years' time, it'll be like the people who are now still on MySpace. Which I hilariously still occasionally, I must still have an account there, and sort of once every year or so I'll get a random email going, do you know so-and-so and so-and-so are now on MySpace? It's like getting an email from the past. Back to the future stuff. It's like, it still exists.
Oh my gosh, I never went onto MySpace, so I don't know anything about that world at all.
Well, to be honest, it's not that different than Facebook, but a lot of Facebook with the horrid making your eye bleed sort of terrible backgrounds that people often do on Tumblr, you know.
Oh,
with,
God, yeah.
But it's just, this is random, but it's interesting because Jim Beaver was actually in terms of the supernatural world anyway, he's always been the sort of social media savvy person, because he was on Facebook, certainly, you know, before he was even on Supernatural, and was the sort of first person from the show to get on, you know, he was on Facebook and that for a while, and he was certainly on Twitter well before anyone else was on Twitter as well. Don't think he's moved on to Tumblr though. Osric's on Tumblr though. You can catch Osric.
Yes, Osric is on Tumblr.
And I'm trying to think. I'm wondering if I think Adam Rose's podcast is on Tumblr,
which if you haven't listened to, you should, because it's really great. I've listened to all of them, and his one with Tim Omundson was freaking fantastic.
And speaking of other creative partnerships, we must mention Kings of Con.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Now let me tell you where they're at, because I've been tracking them as well.
$173,339 US.
Oh, my God, it says the same thing on my screen.
And that's spooky. They're 173% funded.
Oh, funny that. And they've got 22 days left, and they would... You know, they would dearly love to make 200,000.
Oh,
they would dearly love to make 300,000 is like their ultimate goal, because then they could go into full production. I think that's probably a stretch at this point in time. But certainly 200,000 isn't a stretch. It's not that far away. And they could certainly get there, and we'll get 7 episodes if we get to 200,000 and Matt Cohen's Naked Run. Let's not forget that. He promised to do a nude run.
Yes,
he must be an Australian. Aussie boys love nothing more than doing a nude run.
Yes, so he's going to do that. I believe they're putting up some new perks this week, rewards you can get. Remember, if you've already bought something, you can upgrade to something else. So if you...
Yeah, you can buy more than one thing.
They may put up more items of underwear. You can also...
I thought about that, and then I was like, no.
Well, 26 people have so far claimed a pair of Richard's underwear. 50 people claimed a pair of Rob's socks.
The socks the socks don't freak me out as much as Sir Richard's under trousers. I feel really awkward about that.
Yeah, there are T-shirts, posters, a whole lot of stuff. So they'll be putting some more things up. I still like my friend Megan's idea was that they should come to your con room, your hotel room at a con, dressed as French maids and clean it for you, which I think would be very popular.
I think would be very, very popular.
But I'm very excited for that. We've seen, I think, a 10-minute clip now for the people who've backed it so far.
Yeah, and that's another, you back it, you get, like, all these great updates and you get to see these clips. And we did. We saw the 10-minute opening of the first episode, and it was hilarious.
So clever, the way they've used actual footage from conventions and karaoke with the stuff that they've, I was going to say made up. What do you call filmed themselves, written and improvised,
handcrafted, chipped out of wood.
So that it's wonderful.
It is very funny,
hilarious, and they play. So if you've seen any con footage and you know the sort of personas they have on stage at the cons, they're sort of even more exaggerated versions of that. Matt Cohen plays himself as a total asshole. you know, Jared and Jensen were in a little clip. There's a hilarious Osric's in it. There's a hilarious scene of them trying to recruit Timothy Odmundson to be in it, yeah. Which is just so it's and as with you know, this, like the mockumentary from the DVDs last year, it's all about taking the piss out of themselves too, which is you know, and fame and being on the con circuit. While at the same time being incredibly affectionate about it. So it's I want all of it.
Yes, me too. I want all of it. I really want – I would love nothing more than to get to 300,000 so we can get the full slate of production. That would just be brilliant. And I guess the more episodes they get to do, the more guest stars that they can have in it. And yeah, so it's you know, it's going to be fun. It's super fun already. It's going to be a great fun series. And we love these guys. I mean, I absolutely adore Rob and Rich. So, you know, if you haven't, you can chip in for pretty low. The lower, you know, like $5 gets you on board and makes you a backer, means you get your special videos and all that kind of stuff, a little thank you. And so, you know, you don't have to spend a lot of money to get on board and back them.
Yeah, no, do it for all of us, because
do it for all of us.
Do it for all of us, because we absolutely love it, and look at this, such a great laugh, and I can't wait to see the finished product.
Me too, can't wait, it'll be so much fun. Right, is there anything else we need to talk about fandom-wise?
No, I think we should go into talking about our show.
Oh, let's talk about our show then, because it was pretty damn spectacular this week.
Oh, my God. So it was episode 18 of our season of 23 episodes. Book of the Damned, written by the wonderful Robbie Thompson.
Very wonderful.
We always love Robbie Thompson. And what else can we say about it? Let's go get into it. Amy, what did you think of Book of the Damned?
I absolutely loved it. I loved every second of it. I thought it was I loved all both the storylines running concurrently with Metatron and Cass, and then Sam and Dean and Charlie. I thought they were both fabulous. I mean, the Metatron and Cass stuff was just wonderful. It was wonderful to have Charlie back. It was just a super snappy script. It moved along great. The director this week, PJ Pesci, is that how you say his last name?
Yes. Yep.
Who tweeted us, Jules, which was very nice. He did an amazing job. There were some really fabulous shots in there, and
yep,
culminating in that absolutely amazing action sequence to the Who's Behind Blue Eyes, and the slow mo sequence of the table beforehand, and then cracking into that action sequence with their rock riff, and just really well done. I thought it was fantastic and worrying, and just all the great things. It made me so happy and so worried, and I got all sad and happy, and all those, like, the thing that Supernatural does to us and makes us all tied up inside with weird emotions.
Yes, well, it was. Look, you know, just to go back to the beginning, we started with an almost, it almost could have been a scene out of Arrow, as this hooded figure, you know, goes down an alleyway, beautifully shot, by the way, and lit, dirty alleyway. And then we see that the figure is being tracked. The figure, of course, is revealed to be Charlie. But I loved that, because it felt so, you know,
she looked like a ninja or something.
Superhero-y. And we find out that as we go along, it's this guy, Jacob Stein, who's tracking her because she's stolen this Book of the Damned that his family have owned in the past. And what I love is that, you know, not only has Charlie just gone off and been doing nerd research and that, but, you know, she's basically been chased across Europe and North America by the Stein family. And we hear about her having ridden across Alaska on the top of a train. And, you know, she's been doing serious shit. And obviously not the first time she's been in trouble. She gets shot and, sort of almost takes that in her stride as, like, this is what being a hunter. So she's... Yeah. She's well and truly being a fully fledged hunter. This is not just someone who's a nerd doing research or anything. She's out there holding her own, and certainly the fight sequences that we see her involved with are fantastic.
And yeah, she doesn't beat about the bush. She just brings out that sword.
She just beats them.
And, I think she's was in Oz, and she was part of a big war in Oz. So she obviously learned, which works on a different time. So she was there a lot longer than what we thought she was. But she obviously learned a lot when she was in Oz about fighting and things like that. And she's kind of just become this hunter through osmosis, really, through, I think, being thrown into that. I think what happens to most hunters, you know, being thrown into this into this world all of a sudden, and really having no choice but to kind of join the fight, you know, is basically what she's done, and obviously honed her skills, I think, in that Oz war. And so, yeah, she's She's now this like rock and kick ass hunter chick. You know, she's gone from being this kind of geeky, scared hacker chick to this, like, you know, to, as you say, a fully fledged hunter. And it's great. And she's having to make those kind of heroic decisions that, you know, she understands now what the boys have to go through with the kind of decisions that they have to make every day, because, you know, she's being faced with similar situations, and she's being faced with having to protect her own life by taking other people's and you know, those kind of things that she's never had to face before. And now here she is in amongst it all.
In one of my favourite scenes of the episode, and there were a few favourite scenes, but when she and Sam are talking, and, you know, she talks about being a hunter and that, you know, how the life is basically a choice, Sophie's choice between, you know, tears and death, which is a, you know, perfectly sums it up.
It's like bad choice or worst choice.
Yeah, and sums up the boy's life. I love her picking up, I mean, and I think maybe it was you, you or one of my other friends had tweeted about, you know, the thing about having Charlie there is she's very open and upfront with the boys. She doesn't tiptoe around them. And so we get to hear them say things that, you know, we haven't heard them say. They're certainly not going to say them to each other because they're about each other. We don't have a Bobby for them there to talk to anymore. So, you know, her sort of picking up that Dean had made sort of a snide comment to Sam and saying, well, you know, what was that all about? And then, you know, her summing it up as basically, you
brothers.
Know. Yeah, brothers.
Which I thought was really amazing, because it actually, it's what I've always thought that conversation was, and I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about that. But it actually kind of just completely changed perspective on that conversation and how Sam, you know, what Sam did, how he was feeling about it, you know, what it meant. Just by saying that one word, it kind of encapsulated really what that whole thing was about.
And I think also it, and I hope it does for them, but she gives them some perspective, because I think us, we get caught up in the boys' point of view, obviously, where we think everything's, you know, the beginning and end of the world, and they often remind me, because the boys are so isolated, live this strange life, are isolated from other, generally from other relationships. And it's almost like an abusive relationship in a way, in just that when one thing becomes your world, it's very difficult to have perspective on it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, everything becomes life or death with them. Whereas she can sort of, I love it when she sums them up and says, you know, oh, so Dean did something you didn't want, that pissed you off, and you said something to hurt him. Like, which sums it up. But brothers. But for them, it was, you know, the worst thing in the world. And I'm never going to talk to you again. And it's like, they don't have that, and I mean this in the word like you use it with electricity, that grounding force around them. They haven't had anyone, you know, Cass hasn't been that present, to be able to give them that touchstone of, like, you know, as Bobby.
I think Cass is too close anyway.
Yeah, but Bobby used to say, you know, get your head out of your ass, you know, stop being a princess. Like, this is just normal shit people deal with. Okay, most people don't get an angel to inhabit their brother, but the principles are the same, but I think because they're so, you know, so immersed in their relationship and in this life where, which often does have life and death stakes, everything seems to have life and death stakes to them, and that they can't just, you know, if they were in normal life, that sort of argument would probably flare up and go away in the normal course of any argument. But with Sam and Dean, you know, it just everything's heightened, I think. And so Charlie,
and it's why it's so important to have people like Charlie in their world, and these characters that come into their worlds and don't die, and, you know, that they come across every once in a while, and they all do it, you know, like,
Garth was one,
and, for a while. And Sheriff Mills will always have a little nugget for them, and, you know, it's really important to have, we talk about it all the time, Jules, on this podcast, it's always so important to have people to reflect their relationship back at them, because otherwise they can't see the forest for the trees.
Well, and also we don't get to hear it because we don't have monologue voiceover a la Veronica Mars or iZombie in this.
I.e. Veronica Mars with zombies.
Or the first pre-director's cut of Blade Runner, which had the voiceover. We don't get that. So without having Charlie there, we wouldn't have had that absolutely heart-wrenching speech from Sam about how he came to accept hunting as what he wants to do with his life, but then having him go on to say, you know, I can't do it without my brother. I don't want it. You know, that absolute, like, God, Jared, talk about reaching into my chest and pulling out my heart. And even Charlie sort of going, whoa, you know.
Well, okay, I get it.
I've got it. Hold yourself. I mean, that was that little speech he gave was from it was
perfect.
Talking from when Dean came and got him at school. That whole thing, just to be have that opportunity to speak out loud, mm-hmm. you know. This has become my life and I love it. I own that I love it, but I only love it because I'm doing, you know,
with Dean
and that I can't, you know, unequivocally can't do this without him. And that was just,
and you know, which has been demonstrated time and time again for both of them, you know, like whenever on the occasions that Sam has been without Dean for whatever reason, he's been in hell and whatnot, you know, they're or dead with mystery spot, you know, he is very anchorless and
oh my god,
you know, he becomes this totally different person. The whole concept of them keeping each other human, which Dean says at the end of the end, is absolutely true, because both of them flail without each other for, you know, for good or bad, that's just what happens. So it's kind of, and you know, it's a very selfless thing that they want to sacrifice everything to save their brother because they love him so much, but it's also comes from a selfish place of because they love their brother so much, they don't want to be without them.
Sam picked that up last year when he was angry with Dean, you know, the very same time he was saying, no, I wouldn't save you, because he was, you know, as Charlie pissed off and wanted to hurt him. But at the same time, he picked up that, you know, that is part of the reason Dean did what he did. And to some extent overrode what he knew Sam's choice would be, was big, you know, they both know that. It's not a secret. It's just that they have to keep wrestling with what that means. And obviously the path that Sam's on at the moment, and you can see it throughout this episode, is, you know, and again, it's interesting this time because although Sam's now starting to keep some things secret, you know, particularly the stuff with Metatron and Rowena, you know, Dean's being open about, look, I'm not giving up. I just, let's not do the thing that has the high cost. Let's keep going and try and work this shit out, but let's not grab the first bargain basement deal that comes along.
Yeah.
That costs too much, you know.
He's also saying words that Sam sort of said to him in that angry conversation in The Purge, where Sam was like, you know, my life was not worth saving over the millions of others that we could have saved.
Sure.
And Dean's basically saying the same thing. You know, we don't know what the outcome would be if we use the book, but they're saying it's biblical, you know, like we don't, that's going to be a bad thing.
We know that's a bad thing.
You know, that's bad. Biblical's bad, you know, so we don't want to be saving my life. What's my life, you know, compared to that? So it's just, I think it's just so interesting that, you know, Dean is saying very similar things to what Sam said in the same situation last season, and Sam is doing and saying, you know, that it's just beautiful mirroring, I think, through season 9 and 10, which is just really has been, for me, the great joy of season 10 is seeing the story unfold in reverse.
Well, and also it's been building on, you know, really from what the beginning of season 8.
Yeah,
I mean, this arc of them, you know, both re-exploring, can they have a life outside hunting? Can they have a life without the other person? What is that? If they are together, what is that relation? What does that relationship look like? What are the costs of what they do to those around them, to themselves? And you know, that, rightly so, there is no actual endpoint or answer to this, as there isn't in life. You just keep coming up against, you know, new versions of the same questions. As someone who's very old, I can tell you that is what happens. Sorry, all you young people. You don't ever actually work it out.
No, you don't.
42 is not the answer.
Damn it.
Well, it possibly is to 6 times 7, but that's about all. But I just, you know, there were so many points in, you know, this episode again that, you know, we get those moments of, you know, in the car between, you know, between Sam and Dean, and, you know, that I could barely watch the rest of the episode. I thought that actual scene was going to kill me with Dean singing along and then talking about
Sam between our toes. Like, and he's not talking about his toes either. He's not like our toes. You know, I want to go on vacation, but automatically his brother's there in his mind. His brother's there with him. Yeah, you know, it's not. You know,
it's the last time either of us was on a beach. I do want to know, like, great that they have an annual weekend in Vegas. I do want to know who thinks that watching pay-per-view in a crap motel equates to holiday. I thought that was their normal life.
I know, right? Like, that is like just what you do all the time. But I was the same. I mean, Dean just, I remember in a meet and greet, I don't know if it was one I did or one I read. I thought it was one I did. But the Jensen was saying that Dean is not seeing what's happening to him. Mm. Sam is seeing what's happening to him, but Dean isn't actually seeing how affected he's become. And, you know, he's hanging on to this hope so much and wants to be able to live with the mark, wants to be okay so badly that he's not actually seeing the changes that are occurring with him, which is what Sam is seeing, he's not doing great. Where Dean's like, I'm doing great. And Sam's like, you're not doing great.
Although admittedly at this point, you know, compared to where we've seen Dean recently, he does seem to be more in control of the mark. And, you know, it's a bit knowing it's a bad thing and experiencing that are a difference. So when he was, you know, going on his slaughterpaloozas and losing control, was one thing, but I think, you know, there's been a bit of false comfort because for whatever reason that hasn't come up, you know, recently. He's had the nightmares, but, you know, there's been some of it, but certainly not enough that the hope can outweigh that, like the sort of, oh, we could have a fix for this, it could all be over, you know. You know, it's a bit like the further you get away from the real pain and the real truth of it, it's easier for him. Whereas I think it's not left Sam's mind. Sam, you know, every time he thinks about it, he's getting more and more aware of it, and of course doesn't really know. He knows that Dean will be keeping something from him about the extent of what he's feeling, and obviously seeing the effect that the Book of the Damned has on him is, you know, and I thought that was so well done.
Oh my God, that was so clever. It was so clever. Oh, the book's disgusting, man, like pieces of that nun carving itself away. I was like, what? I loved the boys' reactions to that too, like, whoa. That's like almost
hardcore.
But that was so beautifully done, because we're looking at the book in Sam's hands and Dean's watching, and then we see Dean, and then the next thing we're looking down at the book again, and then whoop, we're with Dean in the kitchen, and I felt just as confused as Dean must have. It was so well done. It was like, wait, what just happened? You know, and which Dean would have been going, what just happened? Why am I in the kitchen holding the book? How did that even happen? And we're left with that feeling as well. How did that even happen?
Such
a nice edit and such a nice idea of how to put that scene together. I thought that was beautiful. That was just a really amazing scene. Really well done.
Now, just to swap over to our other storyline and the weirdest road trip ever with Metatron and Cass, which starts with a surreptitious phone call between Sam and Cass, but Cass just, you know, without missing a beat, just punching Metatron out when he gets shitty with him. Will never, ever not be funny. That was just so good. And Metatron's just blah, blah, blah.
Cass is
just boom. Can I kill him now? That was so
good. Oh, it was so good. I really enjoyed them together. And, of course, you know, I was like Cass, I was so involved in Metatron and Curtis Armstrong's wonderful performance and these fabulous words and this ridiculousness coming out of his mouth all the time that I didn't actually notice that he was completely keeping Cass distracted from anything else, so Cass couldn't see what he was actually going to be up to, you know. And it was just such a, I forgot what a manipulator he was, I forgot what a master he was of it, because I was just enjoying him so much. I mean, and Cass was just being annoyed by him so much that, you know, he couldn't see any of it either, but it was so clever and all their conversations were so awkward. I mean, the whole lactose intolerance, let's never speak of it again.
I kept thinking, I'm sorry, Metatron, if you think a pile of Dinah waffles with some
fake cream
out of a what do they call it? Cool Whip or something? I'm like, seriously, and what was obviously, I'd say, fake maple syrup over the top. I'm like, oh my God, Metatron, you haven't lived yet.
He needs to live better.
It was appalling. It was appalling. But it was funny. And, you know, Cass just looked implacable during the whole thing. It's just like, shut up. Now, two things I want to mention when we're at this point, because there were two scenes. We don't often know when scenes are cut. The first one was, and I know you'll be particularly sad about this, there was a Dean working out scene that was cut at the beginning.
I was horribly sad, but because there he was in his little hoodie, and like, because obviously we see Dean in a hoodie, we think, oh, Dean needs cuddles, he's in a hoodie. But no, he was in a hoodie because he'd been out sweating and working out, and I want to know what he does. What does he do when he works out?
Robbie Thompson loves us enough that he wrote in a Dean working out scene, which unfortunately got cut. I'm sure there's already
a
postcard campaign for that to be a deleted scene.
I am leading it. Because I want to see Dean working out. I want to, like, I literally was like, I wonder what he does. Does he do sit-ups? Does he work with weights? Does he punch? Does he
punch?
Boxing, right? And, and, like, what would that have been? Like, would that have been, like, a kind of a getting all angry sort of scene, you know, getting the anger out of him? And like, because I started thinking about why would we see that working out scene? What would that be telling us about Dean? But we didn't get to see it, so I'm really sad.
Was he on the CrossFit? Who knows? Was he doing yoga? I don't know.
Yeah, in tiny shorts and top of him. Yes. I don't know.
He could have been down at the local Lebanon, Kansas Bikram yoga place. Who knows?
Sweating.
The second cut scene, which we actually saw a flash of in the trailer, was Cass Free to Be You and Me in season 5 holding up his fake FBI badge upside down. Now, that apparently was a scene from when he takes Metatron into the diner and has to explain why Metatron's in handcuffs. And yes, apparently there was a joke referencing the film Midnight Run. So we don't often get to hear, you know, obviously there are scenes cut and bits cut in every episode, but they were two we got to hear about this time, which is why we love Twitter, because people who work on the show get to tell us little gems like that. Mm-hmm. Although, of course, often they drive people to distraction. Like, why didn't we get the workout scene?
I've been thinking about it ever since.
Why didn't we? Why aren't the episodes an hour and a half long?
Why aren't they an hour and a half long?
Why do you bother editing them? Just send me the dailies.
So I just need the rushes. That's all. Yeah. I'll just go through them all. I don't care.
I don't need VFX or music or anything.
No. I'm happy with the placeholders. Bit of green screen never hurt my eyes.
The hoodie particularly, and I did note on the wiki for those who aren't aware, after Dean wore Sam's brown hoodie in Faith in season 1, it really did become connected with Dean being hurt. There's actually a Hurt Comfort fanfic com called Hoodie Time. It makes fandom go, ooh, I want to hug him and give him a cup of tea. And it's just interesting to me when you get that intersection of when something's iconic to fandom in one way, and because we only saw him in the hoodie, we didn't know the context for it, we immediately give it a different meaning. So it was quite amusing to find out it was because he was working out, not because he wanted Sam. Sam will know I need a hug.
I need hugging. My hoodie on. And it was a tight one too.
I'm always interested when we put meaning on things and then sort of it's almost a shock sometimes to remind ourselves that that's a meaning we've put onto it, not one the show even hinted at, well, didn't give us. He only wore the damn hoodie once.
I know, once.
Once in 200 and whatever episodes.
In very early on in the piece, in episode 12.
but I love that. I mean, it is about what we bring to the show. And he does look all snug. You do want to hug him when he's wearing a hoodie.
You do want to hug him when he's wearing a hoodie. Oh, when he's wearing a T-shirt or a shirt.
Anything. That just made me think, I wonder if with the squirrel and moose hoodie, does it have a zip? Because it'd be great if you got to zip down the middle of their face.
No, it doesn't have a zip.
Oh, bugger! Wouldn't that be awesome?
My dog just went apeshit. Sorry. No, it doesn't have a zip. It's just a pull-on one.
Oh, damn it. That would be great. Mm. Sorry. Yes. Now I'm thinking about that. Anyway.
No, that would be really cool. Sorry, I just got distracted by my dog going completely ballistic in my lounge room for some reason. I don't know what's going on outside. So sorry if you can all hear my dog going crazy. I don't know what's happening. I'm in another room. She's doing her own thing. I don't know what's going on. I'm like, what the hell? Made me jump out of my skin.
Dog's having a party.
Oh, she's very excited. But yes, I thought that I agree. The hoodie thing's really funny because everybody automatically thought he was sad, but he was sweaty.
Not that fandom needs much of an excuse to want to give Dean a hug, no, but you know, it was the hoodie. And we don't see, hoodie is not an item of clothing worn very often by either of them.
No, not at all. And he had like tracky dacks on as well, his sweatpants on. I was like, Torbs. And he had like a sports bottle. I was like, oh my God.
Yes, it was after I knew what it was. And then I particularly noticed the sports bottle. And I thought, ooh, get you, Dean.
Oh, look at him with the sports
bottle. You can't
bottle.
Drink water out of a normal bottle when you're working out. You
and
have
your
to
exercise.
Have
He's got special exercise gear. Yeah. Did he have, and I see, here's my thing. We didn't see his feet. Was he wearing sneakers? Like what were his sneakers? He had runners on probably. We never see Dean in runners.
Damn it. Frame by frame of that. That's what made me think he left the bunker to go and exercise, maybe.
Oh, maybe he went for a run.
Well, or he went to the gym? The Fitness First in Lebanon somewhere.
I'm pretty sure they have one in they probably have one in the Men of Letters, and it's like really that really old school 1950s one with big old leather medicine balls and those weird rack things on the walls that you don't know, and the things where you pull out the wires, and yeah, it'll be like that 1950s gym.
Rowing machine things. And
no, I don't know, because like they went and bought themselves
an old punching bag.
Yeah, but they went and bought themselves fancy tellies, so you know they might have.
Yeah, I think they've ordered the CrossFit machine.
Put it on their stolen credit card.
Good set of weights, and actually, someone was mentioning, and I didn't get a chance to follow up with them, that they wouldn't be doing credit card scams anymore in the bunker. And I meant to ask them why they thought they wouldn't.
Why not? Yeah. They still need money.
Yeah.
I mean, unless they're selling off stuff from the bunker.
selling off those
garage
cars.
Sale. Yeah.
Well, literally a garage sale.
Yeah, literally
cars.
A garage sale.
Back to Cass and Metatron, who then come out. And something that amused me, a lot of people thought that the angel hanging outside the diner looked like Bobby. And I'm like, well, look like Bobby if Bobby took steroids for 30 years. dude like, was huge.
Huge and about 20 years younger. But I like that he was a very angry Cupid.
He was a very angry Cupid. Cupid wasn't happy with his life, but I was pleased to see another Cupid. And I think that's something we got a lot of in this episode, sort of quietly, if you like, was actually solidifying what we know about how things are going in heaven. You know, Metatron talking about, you know, how Cass has basically been, you know, wandering the earth collecting rogue angels, because we knew he was doing that for a while, but we haven't sort of continually seen him, you know, what he'd done in that area. And it also reinforced what, you know, I've certainly been mentioning, is that, you know, Cass is lost at the moment. He doesn't really have, you know, sure, his mission is helping out Dean get rid of the mark, but in the broader terms of his life, and I think I talked about this in the last our last podcast, you know, he's isolated from heaven. He's isolated from earth. He's not got his own grace. And, you know, he got rejected, if you like, by Claire, who was someone who he felt some sort of connection with. I mean, beyond I fucked up her life connection. I think there was some other connection. You know, he connected with her as a person, and then I think he lost that. And I just feel that, you know, Metatron hit a nerve, as he often does.
Oh my
there,
gosh, totally hit a nerve
with that sort of, well, you know, what is your place in all this?
Who are you? What are you now? Who are you now? Yeah, and I think that, you know, as you say, you know, he hasn't had a. He's been the good guy, the bad guy, the human. You know, I don't think his heart was ever really in that rogue angel chase, even though he's been doing it. It was certainly nothing that he instigated. He just kind of followed along with it.
I think he was doing it because of it's what heaven wanted, yeah, and he heaven to have its, you know, house have, of order and that. Yeah. But I don't. Yeah, it was, and I think particularly.
I think he was torn over. You know, certainly, I think he was torn over whether that was the right thing or the wrong thing to do.
And
as
I think probably after Hannah left, it became. I don't know if he kept doing it.
But like, he hasn't really had any kind of heavenly purpose as such. For a little while, and he has seemed lost for a little while, and more so, and you know, and then there's been this like search for his grace because he hasn't had his own grace, and now that's kind of done. It's like, yeah, you kind of think, well, gosh, I think he's going to have an existential crisis of who am I, why am I here, what am I doing, you know, what is left for me to do. I mean, obviously he's going to help Sam with Dean, and obviously Dean is going to be his primary mission, and I think there's going to be some movement probably on the Novak family scene as well and trying to fix those problems. But really, as an angel, as, you know, like this all-powerful being, who's always had this kind of this mission that's been given to him, to be so sort of rudderless, I think is must be, you know, horrible for Cass. And I think I think Metatron absolutely knocked the nail on the head, and you could tell by Cass's response how angry he was.
Yeah.
That, you know, he really hit a nerve right in Cass, and I thought it was really interesting, and I think I'd bet you anything it's something we see play out.
Yeah, and I think there was a metaphor there, if you like, that he's been lost. He's now got back himself, his grace. But what does that mean?
Yeah.
Now we saw, and many people commented on this and asked us about it, that his wings are still broken. So it's unclear, you know, what the extent of his powers are and his ability to be, you know, full-on angel. As well as what, you know, that he's obviously to some extent, or probably now totally ostracized from heaven, given his kidnapping of Metatron. So, you know, even though he's got his grace back, so he's found himself, if you like, it hasn't solved everything. And yes, he's going to help fix Dean, and that's either going to go well or go badly.
It's going to go badly, of course.
But that doesn't answer, you know, the broader question, which is something that Sam and Dean, as we've just talked about for the last 3 years, have been trying to sort out. What is my life? What do I do with my life? How do I want to live it? That's been the thing. So they've both come to this place of, we're happy being hunters. We love this life. We love doing it together. So that, whatever crises come along in between, they know that's what they want to do. And I think Cass isn't at that point. He's really just beginning his journey of what do I want to do with
what does he do? You know, what does he do? Because as you say, he's ostracized from heaven. He's really just he's always going to be a misfit in that way. He's an angel walking amongst humanity. And that seems to be his plight now. And, you know, what do you do when you are that thing? I thought it was really I thought about it a lot, I have to say, after Metatron's I thought Cass has been lost for quite some time, as you say, the whole finding of the grace, you know, should really be this, oh yay, I'm back, but it's really just a I'm back, now what kind of thing. But
and it's
really made me think about what his path could be, and you know, where he fits in, not just in the story or in the brothers' lives, so, but where does he fit in this world?
Yeah. And it's interesting because I think there's been, you know, over the last three seasons, this parallel with all of them, as there always is. But, you know, we talked last week about you know, Crowley and Dean. You know, Dean's the man with some demon in him and Crowley's the demon with some man in him. Mm-hmm. And we've seen Crowley become, you know, disconnected from, you know, start to re-examine his role and be different. You know, being the king of hell is no longer satisfying. That's not, you know, he finally got what he wanted and then found out it wasn't enough, you know. So he's similarly in a different way, but really in the same position of almost not fitting in hell. You know, he can't hang out with Dean and the boys, obviously.
Obviously.
So I think that's interesting in a strange way for the first time, although they're dealing with the biggest shit, Sam and Dean know who they are and where they are.
Yeah, and where they want to be.
Who they are and what they want to do. They have that clarity, and it's Cass and Crowley who are more at sea of where they fit in and what they want and what they're going to do. Mm. And although for both of them in different ways the Winchesters are pivotal to that, they still have to work out for themselves, you know, what they want to do, mm-hmm. and who they're going to be. So I think we're in for, you know, God, what's going to happen?
I don't know. And then Metatron gets a – I loved all the stuff with Metatron doing the blood sigil. I was like, oh, why didn't I see that coming? Of course, he's going to do that. He's bleeding and, like, the only thing he really needs is blood and a bit of finger painting and poo-poo, you know. They've got loads of spells those angels can do. And it was just – I didn't even think about that. He's bleeding. Well, that's neither, not a good thing. Neither did Cass.
Well, so, I suppose – so they did think he was mortal now. Now, I don't know whether they think that means he's also got amnesia. But, you know, I think they had assumed –
well, Dean's done an angel sigil.
Of course. So it was Cass was not particularly, he wasn't vigilant enough, obviously. I mean, I thought that as soon as he undid his, you know, handcuffs to, or let him go to the toilet, I'm like, yeah, no, look, you just don't, let him go and.
I thought he's going to do something sus, but I just didn't put the two and two together. And I was like, it was really like a head desk thing for me. I was like, oh, Amy, that was so stupid that you wouldn't think of that. But I loved that scene. And I'm very interested to see what it means now. He's got the demon tablet. Where's the angel tablet? Got smashed, didn't it?
Yes, it did. So we know there's lots of good stuff in the demon tablet. Obviously, it had the whole thing about the trials and how to close hell. But we don't know what else is in there.
He can read it because he wrote it.
Yes. Now, we've got to remember that the demon tablets were dictated by God, all the tablets were and written down by Metatron. So, assumedly, he doesn't have any trouble reading them, so he doesn't need a prophet. Oh, Kevin!
Well, there are no prophets.
Just you, Kevin! Oh, I know.
But maybe this is a chance for Kevin to come back to us. And then Cass also understanding the reference because Metatron had stuffed him full of all the knowledge, and he was able to get the quote from Don Quixote because there was the irony in the whole scene that the only reason he was able to do that is because Metatron gave him all the information in the world, so he was able to find his grace. But that was a really cool scene, I think. And I love the play on words. Isn't it ironic, don't you think?
Yes.
Very clever.
Very, very clever writing. You know, I loved all the literary references, and look, you can go to the wiki and read where they all came from, but they all have added meaning within the text of what they meant and where those quotes were from, and it was very, very clever. I love that sort of Easter egg stuff where it doesn't matter if you don't know the books immediately, but go away and read up what each of the books is about. A lot of stuff there about what things represent, and we had actually had the Breakfast of Champions by Kurt Vonnegut. We'd had a reference to when Chuck first appeared, and we find out Dean's actually read the book. So because there's a reference to anyway, I won't go into. I won't go into all that, but really clever stuff. Love the visual of Cass getting his grace back and his wings, broken wings appearing.
I love that. I loved all the books, just the power of him gracing up and just all the books exploding, you know, and that whole library that they so that beautifully built.
They built they and blew they it up. They actually friggin' catalogued all those books.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Look, they actually they put those little labels with the Dewey Decimal System on every book in there. That's incredible. They built that library for that scene. I mean,
and then blew it up.
and then blew it up. Obviously, because you can't actually blow up public libraries. Obviously. Although nice little shout out to no one goes to libraries anymore. I thought that was sad.
Yeah, it's sad. It's true. sad and true. But yeah, I loved Cass just bursting full of the grace and standing up. I mean, I don't know how many times have we seen his wings now. Maybe that was like the fourth time or something. Yeah. And it never gets old. And I thought that was a particularly brilliant one. Like, that was possibly my favourite one since the first time we saw his wings. It was just, even though they were all tattered and broken, it was just like he just looked so powerful standing there. And then the wings are just like the feathers are just falling from the wings, which is sort of such a sad image of the angel wings.
Busted. Interesting. Again, a number of people commented about why his wings are broken. As we know, with the other angels, they were broke when they fell, and people were saying yes, but Metatron put Castiel on Earth. He didn't fall with the rest of them. I think that might be splitting hairs. I think if you are cast out of heaven, I think you are damaged the same way. I'm not quite clear on the mythology then of how the wings get fixed and what the implications. I assume that means he still can't just – he has to keep the pimp-mobile.
Yeah, he's still got Cass's pimp-mobile in the same colour as his trench. So he'll still have to drive. But I thought the same. I didn't actually think much of it. I kind of thought, all the angels were cast – he's cast from heaven as well. And, that even the angels back in heaven would have tatty wings. So that's just what's happened. And maybe angel wings just never grow back. Who knows?
Yes, and maybe – I mean, again, I think the show's quite clever in not pinning down a lot of this mythology in a didactic way so that, you can be open with this. And I'm sure that they...
And it also gives them room to move in the story if they do want to do something with it.
Sure. So, and what form the angels are in, all that sort of stuff, they do have a lot of room to move in that. And even if they've sorted it out in their heads, they can change their mind if we don't know about it.
Exactly.
So, but yes, gorgeous visual.
Yes.
Just briefly, I wanted to touch on the guy who did play Jacob Stein, who
I
thought
I loved that role.
Excellent, and a number of people commented he was a great actor and really, really sold that small role and his family and got killed really well.
He did get killed really well in a very smoking hot scene, I might add, because I was like, does everybody flirt with Dean? Well, probably, because can you just look at him for one moment in that head look? He was just like steaming off the, how could you not flirt with him? He was flirting. There was flirting going on between them. This is definitely. I was just like, please, look at him. How could you not? That was extremely hot.
Random pieces of occasional furniture, flirt with Dean.
Absolutely.
I think we've established that, the whole world wants Dean Winchester. I still go back to that scene at the end of the Executioner's song where we had Sam and Cass and Crowley standing around and it just struck me that, everyone in the world, it's like the most popular kid in school or the prettiest girl or whatever, or the hottest guy or whatever. It's just everyone's focus is on Dean. Wants Dean.
Yeah.
Everyone wants to be besties with Dean or whatever with Dean, but it's like
everybody loves Dean Winchester.
They do, right up until they want to kill him.
Yeah, even when they want to kill him, usually. But, yeah, that was a great scene. It was a great little action scene. I mean, the whole setup of Dean coming in and not seeing straight away and then sort of, seeing the mark of the tat and then the body and it was just wiggling across the floor, shooting his gun wasn't bad and... There's lots of goodness in that scene. But that guy who played Jacob was, I thought he was great. And I really loved, I love the introduction of that family. I think that's super interesting that there's like this ancient occult family, and I really hope we see a lot more of, we're going to see a little bit more about it, but I hope that might be something, you know, bigger down the track, because I actually was like, this is interesting. They're almost like the anti-Men of Letters.
Yes, yes. And again, it's about expanding that world, and, you know, I like that. You know, we've run into. I love the effect they used on that compass too, that could track That was. I want one of them. It was like, I want one of them.
It was like the compass from Pirates of the Caribbean. Always goes to the thing you want the most.
There you go.
Yes, like Captain Jack's compass.
Oh, I better put that on the wiki. That's a good reference.
Mm, it is. It always goes to the thing you want the most.
Someone also pointed out, or they added to the wiki, very clever person, I don't know who it was, that the Stein family crest is really, really similar to the Frankenstein family crest used in the Mel Brooks movie Young Frankenstein.
Oh, how funny.
Now, I don't know who remembers that sort of stuff, even though it's one of my favourite movies. Yes. It's one of my favourite movies, but I would not have been able to tell you what the family crest is.
Me neither.
But God love it. Someone in fandom did.
That's awesome.
It's one of my favourite things is always, you know, decoding, if you like, to use the lingo that was used in the episode was a lot about decoding. And I love decoding all the pop culture references in the episode. But more than that, I love it when, like, someone picked up that the line, "Did we just become best friends?" is from the 2008 movie Step Brothers.
Oh, my God. Will Ferrell movie.
Will Ferrell, John C. Reilly movie. Now, like, I would remember that. Exactly. Someone did. Robbie Thompson, obviously a fan.
Can I just say we had another Princess Bride reference in this one? So that's two Princess Bride references this season.
Yes, we had Dread Pirate Roberts mentioned as well. we know when it's a Robbie movie, a Robbie episode, we're always going to get lots of good pop culture references. We had a Bill and Ted reference.
Yeah. that was awesome.
Obviously, the whole ironic thing. We had a Gambit shout out. I mean, it was thick with them. Couple of other bits of trivia. EP and director, or not director of it, this episode though, Bob Singer was the voice of the DJ on the radio. Mm-hmm. Before we heard Alanis Morissette not come on. And Charlie wore two graphic tees. One's from the comic The Rat Queens. That was the first one where you see it's like a full-on face of a design with a face of a rat on it. And the second one was from the Crossed Axes, which is from the comic series Lumberjanes, both of which are in print at the moment. And can highly recommend as excellent comics to read. Both lots of fun and lots of awesome female characters in them. So it's always – I love always seeing what T-shirts Charlie's wearing. Ooh. And I think Felicia said she's never had to disagree with Robbie's choices.
That's good.
but she was – and look, we two things I wanted to talk about. Particularly that scene in the diner when Cass gets all fierce about, you know, Metatron killed Dean. Mm. And it was like when Sam, it's like, yeah, there's one thing I'm not ever going to forgive you for, and that's killing Dean.
Ever. I'm never going to, as much as I enjoy him, it's always in my head, but the bastard killed Dean, and I'm never going to forgive him for that, because I'll never not see that blade going through Dean's chest when I look at Metatron.
I know, but it's a bit different when the person's still alive, isn't it?
I know, but no. No. It's not at all. Dang, goddammit. But, yeah.
And then, of course, we get the best meet cute ever with Cass Charlie, which is was just to die for.
It was super cute.
Oh, it was
like they did become besties.
You know, fandom had been waiting for that for a long time, and it was very satisfying. And then, as you alluded to before, that final scene.
It was so powerful. The use of that song from The Who was... perfection, absolute perfection. And like, what a great song. We don't get a lot of rock music. We got Thin Lizzy and the freaking Who in this episode, which is amazing. And of course, The Boys Are Back in Town also has a little bit of significance for anybody who's went to the first Vegas con. because that was the theme song. But that whole last scene with them at the table, I mean, what was – it was so – it's something – it felt so incongruous to what we know, what we expect of the Winchesters. There was laughter and warmth and, you know, we never see things like that. And Dean was – and, you know, you're talking about everybody loves Dean Winchester. Everybody wants to be Dean's best friend.
Yeah, yeah.
You could really see in that scene, you know, everybody at that table, he was the thing that is sort of gluing them all together, as you know, like they're all focused on making him survive. And he's like sitting there with his family and he's all smiling and laughing with his mouth full of pizza.
I mean, it was so perfectly done though, because there's this sort of, there's all that, you know, the family together and the happiness and everything. And then there's this building sort of crescendo, this building theme underneath of Sam's just quiet and concerned. And while you're watching, you know, and because of the look on Sam's face, that at the very point you're watching Dean laughing and mouth stuffed full of pizza and that, you then pick up this like, you know, but not everything's okay. Bad shit's
something's on its way.
Yeah. It was a perfect supernatural scene of those two things mixed together, and which is why it got us all in the heart, because at the same time as you're feeling, oh, this is so wonderful and it's gorgeous, and they're together and oh my God, we're going to...
It's like the Last Supper or something. Oh. It was like really, it was like, oh, this is what, I mean, just to seeing Dean laughing like that, which, you know, how often does he ever do that, you know, these days? Not very often, but knowing that it's almost not real. Nothing that was happening at that table was real because of what is coming for them and what they're all going to have to deal with, what he still has going on inside him, what Sam has done and is in the process of doing.
But on the other hand, I'd also say part of it is that no matter what shit's going on, is about taking the moment.
Yeah.
And that's something, you know, that they've had to learn to do being hunters, is take those moments of your holiday being pay-per-view for porn in a crap motel, or your one weekend a year in Vegas, or, you know, or a good burger or whatever. And I think, I think that, you know, I saw it more as, you know, who knows what's going to happen to any of them. And, you know, even Charlie has said, you know, her life now is trying to survive.
Happy to be alive.
So, so like they've all chosen or, you know, been placed in this position. And that I think the fact that they can, you know, eat what had to be cold pizza by the time Dean got back, in the biggest boxes I've ever seen.
Well, yeah. American pizza.
I think Ryan Curtis from the VFX crew said, "Are they pizzas or wedding dresses?"
And then they're American pizzas. They come in those enormous damn boxes because you can't jump over the damn thing.
I know, but it was both a beautiful, heartwarming and heart wrenching scene. And then of course we end with the reveal of Sam going to meet with Rowena, which of course is just like. Rings the bell of concern.
Concern?
Well, I don't know if it's a bigger word than concern. Dread?
Yeah, it's absolutely dread.
Dread?
The whole scene was wonderful. And just seeing, like, this great warmth between Cass and Charlie looking at the, you know, the paper thing that you do. And then Dean, Dean's almost looking at them just going, oh, like, all my people are together and they're having fun. And then there's Sam. You know, like trying to smile when he's looked at, but you can just see this like thing inside him as he's like done this thing that no one knows about. And he's lying to all of them now. He's not just lying to Dean anymore. He's lying to everyone. You know, Cass thinks he burnt the book. Charlie thinks he burnt the book. And just his face. I thought that was beautiful. Jared did a beautiful performance in that scene of making you just go, oh my God, this is so heart-wrenching. And then, I absolutely love the action sequence as well and the reveal with the book not being burnt.
Yes. And look, I think we saw throughout the episode, you know, Sam's fierceness, fierce love, fierce determination to save Dean. And again, I think, you know, I It's the second time I've been rewatching season 10 recently, and you go. It's really good to remind yourself of the place Sam was in at the beginning of this season when. Well, he actually thought Dean was dead, but he knew Dean's body was gone, and we saw the extremes he went to then. So this is no surprise that he's going to be unwavering in doing whatever that he has taken on this. I'm going to do this shit, and then we'll work out how to deal with the cost later on. That he's not going to be swayed from that. So it doesn't surprise me that he did the bait and switch with the book, and that he's kept it and he's gone to Rowena to sort it out. But we know no good's going to come of it.
Well, no, because anything you do with the book causes like very bad things to happen. So,
and Rowena, you've
given it to like an evil witch.
Rowena, oh,
you know, she's now got this power. All power. I mean, apart from the fact that even if they do end up doing the spell to get the mark off Dean's arm, you know what the consequences of that is going to be. Who knows? But Sam has handed this incredibly powerful spell book over to this very evil witch who can do all the spells in it.
And as the episode ended on her saying, you know,
one of the terms,
let's talk terms.
So what's the deal he's going to have to do?
Whatever, there's going to be whatever the kickback effect of the magic is, but then there's also going to be whatever she demands out of Sam, which is not going to be a cheap price. So, Sam, don't do it.
Oh, too late, I think.
So, yes, after this we've got...
only five episodes left.
Five episodes left.
And in 5 weeks, bang, 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 so there's no more breaks or anything. So
for us to gather our thoughts and our feels.
No, we get five eps banging after each other. I have no idea where we're going, you know. I don't know who's in more trouble now, Dean or Sam.
No, neither do I. And we don't know what role, obviously, Rowena's going to play, or Crowley, or what Crowley. Cass can do now he has his grace back. And is Charlie going to hang around? I mean, or is she going to go off on another, you know, find something mission? Or
what's going to happen with the Steins?
Yes, well, you know, I'm pretty sure an evil dynasty doesn't like having one of their own killed.
And he seemed like a bit of a leader of theirs as well, so I'm sure they're going to be pissed.
Not a good position, but a very exciting one for us to be in, I think.
It is very exciting. It's a very exciting, very nerve-wracking, very exciting end of the season. But what's really nice is that at least even if Dean doesn't know what Sam's doing, you know that they're, you know, emotionally they're on the same page, which is a kind of nice place to be towards the end of the season. Some
yes.
are not always in that place towards this part
no,
of the season.
Although as Sam obviously already is keeping things from Dean. We know that's never good. And as he keeps doing more things that, you know, Dean's, you know, not going to be happy with, that's going to see how that relationship there is tested. And but you are still right. They're still more on the same page than, you know, they've been, you know, ever. But yeah, it's a scary time too, because in a way there's almost more to lose. I mean, you know.
It is, because they fought back so hard to rebuild their relationship, and like Sam's now like, you know, like this is my world and I love it. And you know that part of that is because there's a harmony there with Dean now that
yeah, of course.
He hasn't had, you know, for many, many years.
And that's why
years.
He's so partly so desperate to keep it.
And that's part, yeah, exactly. And so, as you say, there's, apart from the loss of each other, there's, you know, this other thing that they've struggled and clamoured back with each other to lose now if they do, you know, if Dean does get angry with Sam, and of course he's going to, because that's what happens. You know, it's a much bigger thing for them to lose than they've had in the past, because they fought so hard to get to where they are.
Yeah, although I suspect, you know, if something of biblical epic proportions is going to take place, that may outweigh however cross Dean is with
I
Sam.
Think so
it might be that might override things, but yes, we have. wonderfully, and as usual, a hell of a ride ahead of us. Those of us in Australia who are lucky enough to be going to the convention down here will actually get to talk to Jared and Jensen about the finale days after it airs, like, which is so exciting. Days
after
it airs,
yeah, a couple of days after it. So Australians, if you're going to All Hell Breaks Loose, please make sure you see the episode before, because you will be spoiled.
Yes.
Because we're not going to not talk about it.
No.
No. So make an effort or be spoiled, one or the other. Just know that that's going to happen. But I'm very excited about that. I'm very excited for two reasons. One, because it'll be, you know, great to have it so fresh in our minds and be able to talk to them about it straight away and be the first con that we'll be the first fan group to be able to talk to the boys about it. And Mark will be there as well. So we've got to assume he's going to be involved in the finale somehow.
Yes.
And also it might make us feel a little bit better.
That they're actually still
in one piece. And maybe they might be able to go, it'll be okay. It's going to be okay. That's all we need to know.
So we'll be back with you after next week's episode.
Yes, we will. Yes, which is it the Werther Project next week? Which
the
is
Werther Project by Bob Behrens next week. Mm-hmm. So tune in for that.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I've been Amy, and I'm Sweet on Dean. If you didn't guess that already.
I'm Jules from the Super Wiki, and I'm just sweet on everyone.
See you guys. You've been listening to the Women of Letters podcast. If you'd like to contact us, our email is wolspn@gmail.com. You can follow Amy on Twitter @AmyInSydney and Jules @SuperWiki.